Well, hello you. Welcome along. It's another episode of My Mate Bought a Toaster, and it's a bit of a special one. I mean, they're all special. Every dive into someone's Amazon purchase listery is a special thing. But this week I've got the kind of king of the podcast, Adam Buxton, on, who I've always thought was wonderful. Since the 90s, I was there before you. I liked him before you. That's how I feel about Adam Buxton. He's so good that I liked him before you, which is about the best compliment you can pay anyone. So this is the Adam Buxton episode where I go through his Amazon account. Would you like to hear, before the show starts, what Adam Buxton does before he gets onto a Zoom call? Do you want to hear what it's like inside Adam Buxton's head? It goes a bit like this.
Getting on the call, the Zoom call with Tom Price. It's nice, that's not a good rhyme. To go with nice, it's too obvious. So yes, here we go, I'm listening to the radio. Well, not the radio, but Spotify. It's 21 Pilots and Saturday. It's the kind of song that I really like. It makes me happy because I'm a bit thick. Here we go. That's too many pilots. Please wait. The meeting host will let you in soon. Adam Buxton Toaster. Here we go. Connecting. Dun, 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 dun. Da-da. Who's this old guy? You've got a moustache. Da-da.
Hello, welcome along to My Mate Bought a Toaster. This week I am so very happy to welcome the wonderful Adam Buxton. Adam, hello, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Always a pleasure.
I mean, it's, you know, I'm one of those people who you occasionally get in touch with and you say, hey, would you do this thing? And then I just don't reply. Mm-hmm. And it's not personal. That's my emailing style for everything. In fact, in my universe, if I don't reply to something, that is one of the biggest compliments you can get because it means I've actually thought about it.
Yes.
But I've thought about it like I've sort of thought, okay, I need to do a proper response to that. So I won't do that right now because I'm just doing this thing. But then I think
that's good to know, because I took your silences to mean that that's not a no. That's not a no. That's a potential future yes, that silence.
Possibly. I mean, it's usually, sometimes it is a no. Sometimes it's like, how I need to just think.
How do I say no?
About how I say no.
Well, listen, it's too late now because you've said yes. In fact, you've even handed me your password and your login. I am currently inside your Amazon account. Are you feeling unnerved? Are you feeling indifferent? Are you feeling curious?
Well, yeah, I mean, all of those things.
Mm-hmm, good.
The whole concept of your show is very much out of step with the general mood of paranoia as far as data goes in the modern world. And I would say the paranoia is justified. I am certainly one of those people who thinks that we need to be more careful with our data and companies need to be more responsible with the way they treat it. But does that extend to the way I actually behave in my personal life? No, because I'll just give out my Amazon password to Tom Price and let him do what he wants with it. And he's probably going to pass it around to other people. And
yeah,
anyway.
Yeah, I've got a forum on Reddit where I hand out all the famous passwords. Adam Buxton's password, Tom Price is the best. Everyone knows now.
Also, I do buy a lot of stuff on the Amazon. Mm-hmm. And I'm not going to do the speech that I've heard your previous guests do about excoriating themselves with guilt for, you know, trading with the filthy Amazonians. But, and by the way, obviously, I'm not talking about actual Amazonians.
Those guys, man.
I'm talking about the company.
Not, that's really punching down if you're going for those tribes. That's not fair.
I know. I'm fine with anyone from the actual Amazon. Okay. But, you know, I don't like doing it. I try and use, like, I very seldom buy books there, for example. Mm. And if I feel as if I can get a product from a smaller, less evil outfit, then I will. Mm-hmm. But on the other hand, The convenience. So there you go. I've done the exact same speech that so many of your previous guests have done.
That is a classic start of the show caveat. Thanks for doing that. It means we can now dive in guilt-free and go back to your first ever order, which was, this is a good one, nearly the last century, the 19th of June 2000.
This is when buying things off Amazon wasn't unethical.
No, I think
Or you didn't have to feel... I don't think it's unethical now, by the way, but you didn't have to feel guilty because they weren't a giant.
No, and I think their megacorp tax paying was possibly better than it is now. I mean, we might get into murky water straight away, but I think it's right in saying they paid.
Back then, it was just Jeff reading the emails.
That's it.
And sitting there surrounded by shoe boxes and gaffer tape.
It was Bezos in his boxes. And Jeff packaged up for you two books by a man called Roger Price, no relation, Slam Dunk Mad Libs and Goofy Mad Libs. What are the Mad Libs books? Come on then.
Have you never played Mad Libs?
No.
Oh,
no.
Mate.
Be your own comedy writer from the creators of the original Mad Libs.
Mate. Matey, mate with the hard eight.
What have I missed out on here then?
That is something that came from being grotesquely privileged as a youth and getting to go to the United States of America on a quite regular basis with my dad, who was then travel editor of the Sunday Telegraph. And he would travel around the world and take us with him whenever he had the opportunity. It was wonderful, and he loved America. This was back when America and Americans were, let's just say, cooler than now. they still seemed to be a pretty together country, and everyone there was nice and fun. And
so far today, we've offended Amazon tribes, Jeff Bezos, and all the Americans now.
All Americans.
Yeah. Okay, good. Add that to the list. Cool.
Listen, I still think that there is so much amazing stuff in America. It's a beautiful country, parts of it at least. Yeah. And my dad loved all that. So we would go out there fairly regularly, and I just adored it there. And one of the things we picked up one rainy afternoon when we were staying somewhere was a copy of Mad Libs. And it's essentially like a little notepad. And on each page, there is a story, but they have left out adjectives, verbs, nouns, and proper names.
Yes.
And then you go round the group and you say, okay, Tina, I need a adjective from you. All right, Jeff Random. I'm trying to think of interesting names.
It's really hard to do. It's much harder than it looks thinking of random names.
I need a noun from you and that kind of thing. And then the person doing it fills them all in, and then you read it out at the end, and it's just a sort of crazy, hilarious nonsense screed with amusingly inappropriate adjective, nouns, verbs, and proper names scattered around. It's more fun than you might imagine. And when you play it as a youngster, it's mind-blowing to see the medium of words scrambled up like this. If it's the first time you've encountered it, or if it is the first time you've encountered it, you just think, oh my God, this is the best thing I've ever seen. And it's hilarious. And mum and dad are laughing and everybody's laughing. And it was just, we had so many good times with it that I remembered it years later. And when buying things on the internet became a thing, I thought, oh yeah, I'm going to have that. Because I had children by that point. What was the date on the purchase?
19th of June, 2000.
2000. Okay, so I didn't have children then.
No.
And I don't think we were even thinking that we would. So I guess I was just buying that as an adult pleasure.
You just saw Amazon had arrived and you're like, I'm diving straight back in there. People do that though. Early doors on Amazon. We've had that a lot on this show. People dive back to a thing that they haven't been able to get from a shop for however many years. So is it fair to say this could have been the seeds of comedian Adam Buxton beginning back in the day when you're sitting on a plane with your mum and dad playing Mad Libs?
I liked that idea of scrambling things around and word fun. You know, I really like writers and comedians who care about words and play around with words and the meaning and grammar and all that stuff. I suppose because my dad was quite strict about it, mildly fascistic. And he was one of those people who would constantly correct you if you used bad grammar.
Quite right.
You know, what were his big ones? And pronunciation as well. I've talked about my dad quite a lot recently because I wrote about him a lot in my book, Ramble Book. And he kind of reinvented himself as a posh guy, having grown up in a working class family down in Sussex. And part of his reinvention, I suppose, was to be this stickler for grammar and pronunciation. It was so weird.
It's so weird. It's so weird how class and grammar are completely tied together. And and good grammar and good pronunciation are almost the sort of the rungs on the ladder. If you get those right, you creep upwards.
Because it's an easy way. It's like an established code that reinforces your identity. And so it's an easy way to judge whether other people fit or not. So I guess in the modern world, it's generally seen as a negative thing to be a pedant about grammar and pronunciation and all that kind of stuff. But on the other hand, I don't know, you know, I understand the impulse to care about words and to get frustrated when people are just tossing them about willy and nilly with nary a care for what they actually mean.
I couldn't agree more. When people don't, even when people, you know, like though on Twitter was one that really annoys me, THO. People have really stopped using question marks on Twitter now. It's the place is grammatically speaking, is a sewer now. I mean, politically, it's a
wasteland.
Bin fire, but it is a wasteland. And it's you know, it's us falling apart one word at a time.
But sometimes I buy style guides. Do you know those?
Well, I can see that from looking at you. You mean clothes or?
No, not clothes, as you can see from looking at me. Most newspapers and large publications, journalistic publications, will publish a style guide. So you can Google Guardian style guide, and you will find A to Z, a list of all their guides for people who write for the Guardian, things to avoid, grammar points, the actual definition of certain words and phrases. And it's really fascinating. And when I'm reading through these, because I buy a few of them, I bought the Economist style guide the other day, which is maybe a little bit stricter than the Guardian one. Mm-hmm. And I'm going through and I'm reading stuff in there and every single thing I do wrong. So it's not as if I'm terrible.
So is it things like we will not have hyphens, we are semicolons all the way, or no, you know, like what, no ellipses, please. It's always a full stop, or sentences need to be this short. Like, that's amazing to think that exists.
Let me give you an example. Hang on.
It's quite helpful if anyone is thinking of becoming a journalist as well. What do the Telegraph?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Telegraph, what do the Mail need? Just fury. Block caps.
It's really interesting. Here we go. Okay, so here's an example. Here's a few examples. This is from the Guardian style guide under C. So for example, they according to the Guardian, and this is their in-house style. So other people elsewhere would disagree. Other publications would do it differently. But this is how the Guardian does it, just so that there's a sense of uniformity to the journalism there. So they say cafe. No accent. So when you're writing for The Guardian, you don't put the accent on the E for cafe.
Okay, well, I disagree with that. There should be an acute accent on that E. Thank you.
Yeah. Calais refugee camp. Use this phrase instead of the jungle. While the jungle is recognized as the camp's name, it is a derogatory term, so its use should be limited.
Okay.
Calcutta, spelt C-A-L-C, now Kolkata with two Ks. Californian, a person. The adjective is California, which is why Brian Wilson did not write a song called Californian Girls. The same rule applies to other US states. So a Texan drilling for Texas tea is an oil man, etc., etc. Call girl, like vice girl, an old-fashioned term encountered only in the tabloids where it is always the 1950s. So they're basically just going through all these kind of words and phrases that creep into usage, but you have to be kind of mindful of if you are writing for the Guardian in this case.
That's so precise. Imagine putting that compendium together. Do you think they've got one person whose job is just that all the time, just to write
down? I think they've got a few. I mean, the other thing is, of course, they keep having to update it.
Yeah, especially the Guardian.
Yeah.
especially nowadays.
Exactly.
Every couple of hours, they got to scrap it and start it again. You can't use this.
You can't say anything these days.
Oh, well, we're getting rid of hyphens, are we now? Okay. Because they're offensive to the hyphen... The non-hyphen community.
Oh, I ran out of steam on that.
I like him. Ooh, my mate bought a toaster. My mate bought a toaster.
Shoving all lines that have been so far, my mate bought a toaster. Cardiac arrest, when the heart stops beating unexpectedly, as opposed to a heart attack, when the blood flow to the heart is blocked.
Oh.
All means something different.
Hey, has it got the difference there between vaccine and inoculation? Because I still haven't worked that one out. Apparently there is a difference.
I mean, no is the short answer, but I can Google it for you.
I mean, that's just Google. That's not a style guide. That's really... this podcast has just become live Googling now.
Which I don't mind, personally. When I listen to people Googling on podcasts, I think, yeah, this is good.
This is what I would do. This is what I would do.
Saves me doing
it.
What
is the difference then?
Inoculation, according to the World Health Organization, according to the World Health Organization, vaccination and immunization are related, although one describes an action while the other describes a process. Vaccination employs vaccines to stimulate the body's own immune system to protect a person against subsequent infection or disease. Inoculation is a set of methods of artificially inducing immunity against various infectious diseases. The terms inoculation, vaccination, and immunization are often used synonymously, but there are some important differences.
Oh.
God, this is a long introduction to... Just give me the answer.
Yeah.
What are the important differences?
Just one point will be enough.
No, you have to read a big, long thing.
Okay, fine. Forget that.
Sorry.
I can't do that. I haven't got the concentration back for that. All right, listeners, if you know, at ToasterPod on Twitter, thank you very much indeed. All right, let's move on, Adam. Come on, let's plow on through now. We're leaving behind 2000. We're going to the 13th of February, 2003, day before Valentine's Day. You've spent nearly £40 on a bunch of music. You've bought Pavement. Oh, fantastic Pavement album, Slanted and Enchanted. Very nice. You bought Brian Eno, Discreet Music, and Phil Manzanera and 801. 801 Live.
Yeah, haven't listened to that one very often. Mm-hmm. Phil Manzanera, wow. He was in Roxy Music.
Okay.
So I guess I was just digging deep into the Brian Eno hole. And I love all things Brian Eno related. Discreet Music is good. That's one of his ambient ones. I don't know if I've listened to it that much. It's the kind of thing that is nice to work to if you're doing some manual labor.
Yeah, good.
Or doing something where you do, like, do you play music while you're working?
No, if I'm writing, I have music.
Yeah, writing.
If I'm doing manual labor, like a bit of, you know, like a flat pack furniture or a bit of gardening, not that I've ever gardened. It's podcasts all the way. It's podcasts all the way. But if I'm writing, it's...
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's music.
But so you listen to music while you're writing?
Yeah, I do.
That's impressive. I can't do that.
You have to have it all off, complete silence.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I've never actually asked anyone who would give me a definitive answer, but I think I might have some kind of diagnosable concentration problem.
Mm-hmm.
And it's always been that way. It was a real issue at school.
Mm-hmm. This is such a big moment for that. There's so many people who are having this realization about ADHD at the moment. We've talked about it on the last couple of episodes, in fact.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Jamie East came on and said he's just getting diagnosed. I've had a diagnosis of ADHD. And
really?
Yeah. Sound is a big part of it. If you get really distracted and taken away by sound and have massive overreactions to it, that is a big sign of ADHD.
Oh, well, that's me down to a T. I get... One of the reasons I love music is that I am instantly transported by it and my heart starts racing. Like if I like a song or if it's in any way emotional, and it's now becoming a real problem now that I'm 51 years old, and it doesn't take that much to set me off.
You well up. Are you a weller upper?
I'm poor weller, mate. Yeah.
Who are you?
And now that I play music to my children, like my children are getting into music, all three of them really love music, which is just
That's so exciting
for me.
Yeah.
And what's more, they don't mind listening to old music. So they're not sort of chart fascists.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll be skidding around on Spotify or whatever. And they'll say, oh, have you, Dad, heard of Neil Diamond? And I'm like,
let me tell you about Neil Diamond. Right, where shall we start?
So last night I said, yeah, man, I know Neil Diamond. He's great. I said, have you heard Holly Holy? Do you know Holly Holy?
No, no.
Holly Holy. It's kind of like a, it almost sounds like I said, a big spiritual, like a whole church choir singing this incredible thing. It just builds and builds and builds. It's so over the top and emotional. It's amazing. So I was sticking this on in the kitchen. I was really struggling not to just go.
It's a gut punch. But I always want to be one of those people who reacts to music and gets emotional. And I often get very in my head when I'm at a concert and I'm watching it. And I think, come on, where's the... Did you ever get that where you're like, come on, I should be enjoying it now? And I was watching, it was Ben Folds, in fact. I went to see him live and I'd forgotten to be on Emotion Watch to try and make myself get emotional. And I just found myself completely welling up at one of his songs. I can't remember which one it was now.
Brick.
Brick. No, like Brick. It was Jesus Land.
Brick's the only one Brick's, I know. Okay.
But it's, as soon as that sort of self-monitoring thing had switched off and I just listened to the music, I was like, oh yeah, it does work. It can gut punch you if you let it in.
Yeah. But I can't, like Joe Cornish and Edgar Wright, I know they both listen to music while they're writing their amazing film things. And Joe and I, when we were trying to write together at one point, before Joe completely abandoned me and thought, right, screw it. I'm just gonna tether my writing cart to Edgar.
Yeah, mistake. Big mistake.
We were sat down in a kitchen and we were trying to write and he was putting music on. I was like, I can't concentrate at all. And it was at that moment I knew that it was not going to happen.
Oh God, that's that early on. But you spent so much time together, working together, you and Joe, surely.
Yeah, but we always worked quite separately. And yeah, we've only recently started to admit that publicly. When we were doing the Adam and Joe show, our TV show together in the late 90s and early 2000s, we were always scrupulous about claiming that we did everything together. Because I knew enough about indie bands and all sorts of bands to know that when one member starts taking too much credit, then the dynamic starts to crumble. Mm. So, and you know, a lot of bands that have real longevity, well, Radiohead are the one that spring to mind, but I think Coldplay do this as well, probably because of Radiohead, but they all share the writing credits. Mm. And it doesn't really matter who contributed what. They know that it's better just to split it. If you start getting into, oh, well, no, because actually I wrote most of the words there, so it doesn't really seem fair. As soon as you get into that, say, yeah.
You're doomed. You're completely doomed.
You are doomed. That was Joe just emailing saying, you're not going on about the credit thing again, are you? Everyone knows that I did all the funny stuff and you just ponced around.
Fucking
offensive way of putting
it. Apply to him now, or do you want to tell him he's a...
Hank, just give me one second.
Yeah, go on, mate.
Fuck Dickens. You stupid cock. Send.
Great.
Here we go.
My matey potato stir.
Hi, I'm Scott Hancock, and I host From Queer to Eternity, a new podcast exploring what it means to be queer, where we have conversations like this.
I look at younger generations and go, you can just Google this stuff.
The fact that the only mention of queerness was don't get AIDS.
If I'd been marrying a girl, that would not have happened.
Maybe we can find a universality that we weren't aware of before.
That's why this podcast is so great, because actually, well, I guess we just don't think to speak of this stuff, and yet it's part of our fabric.
From Queer to Eternity, available to listen to now from the Great Big Owl Company.
All right, listen, 2005 then. Again, a lot of music you're buying at this point, Adam. And that's very common, actually, for people on their Amazon shopping during this bit of the decade. Lots of people just buying things like, for example, you've got our famous country music makers, Roy Rogers. Very nice. The Monks, Black Monk Time.
Oh, it's a peach.
There you go. What else have we got? Slits and Cut. This is all good stuff. And as I would expect on Adam Buxton's Amazon history at this point, I would say. This is what I'm expecting.
Yeah, a lot of that. I think there was an internet radio show that I discovered. I don't know what they would have been called in those days. It was a sort of a live stream, I suppose. And I don't remember exactly where I would go to listen to it, but it was just the first time I'd ever heard music live streaming online. Mm. And it was a lot of shows from America. They sounded like college radio shows, and they would play really good left field stuff. And it would be a good mix of actually very similar to that little selection you just mentioned.
Yeah.
So it might be, well, I bought the Roy Rogers thing because they played Tumbling Tumbleweeds, which is a really great track that I think's probably been used in quite a few movies. But it's very strange and haunting. It's the kind of thing that you might imagine David Lynch would use, you know, and not what you'd expect from the king of cowboy country as Roy Rogers was. But it was this beautiful, haunting track. And then, you know, they played something by Pere Ubu after it. So it was really good, this this radio station online. It got me into lots of things.
Oh, yeah.
And Cut was one of those records that... Is that them with the... Are they all covered in mud on the cover?
Hang on one second. I've skipped on ahead to 2006. Hold the line, caller, while I go back in time.
I think it is. I think
yeah. So this- yeah, Cut. They that's right. They've three ladies on the front, and they are covered wearing, but they're wearing nothing but mud. To be fair,
yeah. And I remember seeing that record in the house of a friend of mine's mother. He when I was at school, my best friend was a guy called Tom, and his parents were divorced. They were and it, he was the first person I knew whose parents were divorced, and I just, to me, that was my worst nightmare, that my parents would split up, which they eventually did. But, and it wasn't so bad because I was a lot older. But in fact, they should have split up way before. But when I was 10, you know, the idea that my parents would split up was the most appalling thing I could conceive of.
Why? And what was so bad about it? Because it would ruin home life, or because of like
yeah, because I loved I loved them both, and they were both really nice to me.
Right. Okay.
And yeah. I had a lovely childhood. I loved it, and so I didn't want to be catapulted out of that.
Yeah.
And I didn't want. I just couldn't conceive of the possibility of them not getting on or not liking each other. I mean, very soon thereafter, I realized that was the case, and they. And they irritated each other massively. And eventually, as soon as they could, they got away from each other. But they were one of these middle class, upper middle class, perhaps, parents who felt that it would be too disastrous an admission of defeat. So they stayed together as long as they possibly could. And in fact, they never got divorced because they, I don't know, they just, it was too much to actually admit that they were getting divorced. It was crazy. Anyway, I went to my friend Tom's house, and it was like, wow, Tom, he's fine though. His parents have got divorced, and he's like his life's continuing, and he seems okay.
Mm. And he's got this CD with naked women on the front of it, so everything's going great.
He's got, well, his mum was very groovy, and she was a journalist who hung out with a lot of groovers in London, and you know, went to a lot of punk gigs. This is the early 80s, so maybe more new wavy gigs. And she swore, and in her, where we went to stay at her place, like she'd just go out. We were only 11, but we'd hardly ever see her. And we were sort of hanging around in this place in Clapham South. And, you know, her front room was painted dark blue. And she had drug paraphernalia lying around, you know, like rolling papers and a rolling machine and all these albums stacked up against the wall. And one of them was, Cut by the Slits. And I just looked at it. I was like, Cut by the Slits.
Just sounds
look
rude.
At the Slit. It is. I'm pretty so sure rude. That is rude. And look at them. They are not wearing clothes. They are wearing mud. And I can absolutely see their boobies. And what the fuck is that?
I'm literally looking at six boobies on my friend's mum's house's wall.
And I just thought, what kind of music is that going to be?
What sort of thing is it? It's just going to be satanic. I couldn't even conceive of it.
Do you think that's why you were scared of your parents splitting up? Because you thought your mum might start listening to music like that? Was that why you were so scared?
Yeah, I just thought my mum was instantly going to go and find some mud and paint her boobies with it and just start running around in the streets.
We're all scared of that. Deep down, I think we're all scared of that, Dr. Freud.
Butter toaster. Riding online shops just like a roller coaster. Oh, don't it feel so fine when you're buying all lovely strange things online, like books, weight sets, and posters. Come on, hear the best of the best of my mate, butter toaster.
Sport fishing. What's this? Sport fishing. Shadowy men on a shadowy planet. Do you know what this is? The 23rd of January 2010, you bought this.
Shadowy men on a shadowy planet. Sounds as if it could be a comedy thing. Is it Kids in the Hall?
CD. It's a CD. Short. Oh, yeah. The tracks that stand out, I'm looking at reviews. The tracks that stand out are three-piece suits, Spy School graduation theme, and 13 untitled track. I think it's music.
Oh, okay. No, they're a band. Okay. Right. Shadowy men on a shadowy planet. Well, they must have done... Yeah, there we go. They did a song called Having an Average Weekend, which was the theme tune for Kids in the Hall.
Okay.
Which was the Canadian sketch show, comedy show. Did you ever used to watch that?
No, never watched that one. When was that out, please?
That was big in the 90s, I wanna say. Okay. Do you ever say, I wanna say?
I wanna say, I'm thinking... yeah, sometimes.
My son loves saying, I want to say. I want to say 4 o'clock. Well, just say 4 o'clock then. I'm not stopping you.
Do what you want to do.
Say whatever time you want.
Follow your instincts.
But it's one of those phrases I'm annoyed by, but it's fun to say. I understand why people say it. It just gives you, you're buying yourself a little bit more time. I want to say Thursday. Just say Thursday then.
The one I do, which causes problems, is I say interesting too much. And I'll say it when someone says something not interesting at all, because that's my biding time word. Interesting. And people are like, you're just being openly sarcastic at me. It's a problem. It's a problem.
Yeah. Kids in the Hall it was very influential, especially obviously in Canada where it came from, but also in the States, I think it was... It was kind of like, I don't know, maybe I'm trying to think of something that would be analogous in the UK. Maybe Fist of Fun or something like that. You
okay.
Know. But Kids in the Hall was late 80s. So it was very much a kind of alt, new wave comedy style.
Right.
That was quite strange and surreal.
Oh, yeah.
When I first, and they were a bit like the League of Gentlemen meets the Fast Show or something like that. Like they were quite cinematic and involved, and they were very good actors, and they played like they were really good at doing their character stuff.
Yeah.
I haven't seen it in years. I imagine a lot of it is no longer appropriate. it's probably problematic, but it was good. It was pretty good.
Look, here we go. 25th of April, 2010. You've bought David Bowie by David Bowie. Are you a fan of? Are you like David Bowie? Do you? I didn't know that. You should really mention that. You should bring that up in conversation. So is that his first album then?
I suppose it is an early one. Yeah. Why did I buy? I'm surprised I bought. I guess I bought it on CD. I would have had it on cassette when I was little.
Yeah.
And it is really good. I like it. It's. You know, the early kind of more music hall stuff when he was really trying to find his voice and famously ripped off this guy called Anthony Newley, who was big in the 60s as a, he was an actor and a comedian and a performer, and he was kind of a jack of all trades, and he would do these strange theatrical satirical songs, almost like comedy songs of the day.
Mm.
And Bowie really liked that. And that's what he wanted to be. He wanted to be a kind of song and dance man who did a bit of acting, but he always loved his comedy. And so he appreciated the satirical and comedic aspects of Anthony Newley. And so those things fed into his early attempts at putting together a collection of songs for an album. And I think that's what you find on David Bowie by David Bowie.
He was a sponge, and love. He was a real sponge. It's weird to think of David Bowie absorbing stuff in the 60s. I think of him as such a sort of beginning in the 70s and then blossoming into who he was over the following decades. But of course, the 60s were massive for him because that's when it was starting. It's an odd thought.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, it took him quite a while to figure out what he was going to do. And famously, he, you know, he was quite sort of utilitarian. Music was a means to an end. And the end was to be famous. And he was always quite candid about being one of these people who really just wanted to be famous.
But that's a massive taboo now. No one wants that anymore. No one, that's uncool to say.
No, because it's a stupid thing to want.
Yeah, that's true.
It's like, no, you're putting the cart before the horse, mate. Find something that you love doing and that you are somewhat good at. Mm. And then if you get famous, okay, that's a bonus, depending on how you see it. But don't just go and try and be famous. That never works. But I guess maybe if you're someone as talented as Bowie, all you need to do is just find your medium and plug yourself into it. And then he said, you know, if he'd been born 30 years later or whatever, then he wouldn't have made music at all. Maybe he just would have done stuff online.
Podcast, mate. And podcaster. He'd have been a great podcaster. Oh.
He would have been a podcaster. There you go. Yeah.
Imagine.
But I don't know. I think that's probably bullshit. He was... He was best at music.
Mm.
I liked his acting, and I'm sure he was a perfectly interesting painter, and all the other things that he turned his hand to were worthwhile. But the music was
definitely best at music. I think of him as a musician. Yeah, 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 yeah. I think that's okay. We don't need to whisper that. It's fine.
What have we got on the... Okay, David Bowie, 1967. Yeah. It's got a lot of good stuff. Uncle Arthur, Rubber Band. There's a rubber band that plays tunes out of tune in the library garden Sunday afternoon while a little chappie waves a golden wand. Rubber band! In 1912 I was so handsome and so strong. My moustache was stiffly waxed and 1 foot long. And I loved a girl while you played tea time tunes.
You've sold it. I'm buying it. That's incredible.
And it's all these sort of weird... Join the gang. Let me introduce you to the gang. Johnny plays the sitar. He's an existentialist. Once he had a name, now he plays our game. And it's a satire of swinging London. Yeah. So he's living in swinging London, but he's out in the suburbs a little bit. And he comes into town and he sees all these groovers cruising around Carnaby Street. And half of him is thinking, that's what I want. I want to be part of that gang. But the other half of him is thinking, you're a bunch of tits and I'm going to take the piss out of you in this song. And I really strongly relate to that feeling of, on the one hand, wanting to belong and wanting to be where the cool people are. Mm. And on the other hand, just thinking, fuck you, and taking the piss.
You're basically describing the experience of sitting in any media sort of lovey's private bar in London. Everyone will be sitting there thinking, God, you know, I'm part of the media set, you bunch of pricks. And yet everyone in that building is thinking the same thing about each other.
Yeah, exactly.
Bunch of dicks. Okay, look, here we are in 2010. Look, there's a lot of storage here, Buxton. There's a lot of storage. You have
2010. Yes. Moving out of London.
Yeah. Okay. All right. So that was the moment, wasn't it?
Oh, no, we've moved.
Okay.
Okay. 2010, we are moving. No, we are moving again. We moved out of London. 2008, when my daughter was born, the last of our three children. Uh-huh. And that was the condition. My wife blackmailed me and said, if I don't have another child, I'll never be happy again.
Great. Yeah, lovely.
And I said,
romantic.
What? What kind of thing is that to say? I was like, right, okay, if we're blackmailing, then how about we have to move out of London? Because there wasn't really any point in being in London. When you've got young children, all the fun things about London tend to evaporate. I mean, there's lots of convenient things like schools and play areas and other parents that you can...
Yeah. Great coffees.
You know, share your sorrows with. Mm-hmm. But all the fun things, like going to gigs and parties and generally fooling around, you don't really get to do any of those anymore, or at least I didn't. So I thought, okay, well, let's just move out.
Yeah. Why did you go to Norfolk? Why did you head that way?
That's where my wife's family come from.
Oh, I see. So all, good.
Yeah,
good.
All her family were in Norfolk. So I thought, yeah, that'll be good. Childcare, tick.
Did you feel a bit like you were retiring? Was the inner kind of ambitious media lovey like, oh God, this is it, I'm switching myself off?
A little bit. And I remember Stuart Lee had a big routine around that time on his TV show about people moving out into the country and how desperate they were to prove to you that it was that they were glad they did it and it wasn't totally lonely and they hadn't just given up.
And have you got any cocaine?
And that's right. And have you got any cocaine? And I remember feeling quite offended when I watched that routine. It was one of the very few times I thought, I think I'm offended.
This is the beginning of the culture wars.
Yeah, because I just thought, that's not true. And I don't think, that is not true. And I think you're taking the piss out of someone like me. And I don't like it.
I will shut you down.
Yes. Anyway, of course it was true. And it was funny. And there was a bit of that going on. But the thing was, I really loved being out in the country. And I still do. And it is just amazing. You know, I feel very lucky to be able to do it, but it is, you do pay the price a little bit and you do have to be mindful. You have to work a bit harder to be sociable. And then, you know, if a pandemic comes along,
that's not going to happen.
Then you really are extremely isolated.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
And then at the other end of it, I feel as if we're coming out of it now. And I do feel as if reintegrating is going to be a challenge, but I guess it's a challenge for everybody.
We had friends over for dinner the other night. It was very difficult. I walked out of the room. Several times I walked out of the room because there was something on TV that my kids were watching. And I just thought, I don't need to be sitting at this table talking to you. I just stood up and walked off like a bored toddler because I don't have, there are no social rules anymore. I found myself sitting, watching the thing my son was watching. And I was like, Jesus Christ, Tim and Lydia are next door. And I've just fucking walked away from them. It was really weird. I had to go and apologize. I was like, guys, I'm really sorry. It just feels like every day is another sort of family are here Groundhog Day, and I just sauntered off.
Yeah,
that's right.
Yeah, exactly.
The Yamaha QY100, one of my favourite QYs. There, £509, Buxton.
It's a big one.
Woo! Love making your sounds. You love making music, right? And that's what you're doing here. Yeah.
Yeah, that is a great bit of kit. Mm-hmm. The QY100. I'm looking at it now. You can buy a used one for just less than £150. I would recommend it. It's a fun thing that makes music making for the non-musician quite easy. Yeah. And that's good because I am not in any way formally musically trained / talented.
Oh, you're talented. You left a pause there so I could jump in and say you are talented. Your jingles are fucking amazing, Adam Buxton, and you know it.
Thanks, man. Brilliant. No, I mean, some of them are good, but yeah, I think there is a difference between being good at 30-second jingles and actually having talent. So, but the good thing about something like the Yamaha QY100 is that if you dig into it, you can really screw around with it and do some quite sophisticated and complicated stuff. And I remember seeing a documentary about Bjork, who was one of the people I very much admire, and she was using the QY100 and getting, you know, quite different stuff out of it than I was. I generally stuck to the kind of arpeggiator feature and used a lot of the preset patterns in there. They've got a load of really good musical patterns.
Hang on. Are all your jingles just demo mode? Is that what we're discovering here?
A lot of them. Yeah. A lot of them. And I've never tried to conceal the fact because it would be too embarrassing. I mean, yeah, a lot of them are loops or even whole jingles from apps like GarageBand or Logic or whatever. I use library music quite a bit. But things like the Yamaha have been really good. I've done quite a few things on that one.
Nice.
In fact, I didn't do the counting song on that one, but it's got some really nice, sometimes these relatively, I mean, £500 is a a fair bit. Yeah. But still, in the world of synthesizers, it's not that much. And you can sometimes find with these cheap or mid-priced bits of equipment, some of the sounds are really nice and meaty. Yeah. And they've got nice little drum sounds or very chunky bass things that you can customize. Yeah. And yeah, that was a great purchase.
Does it take you a long time when you're, say you're, you know, you're writing a new song for the show? Do you lose yourself for days on end, or is it quite a kind of, yeah, it's an hour in and out, all done?
It varies. It's usually the good ones don't take very long. The bad ones take ages and ages and ages because they're not working and you keep... That's not always true, actually. Some of that, like I've got one called Have You Seen My Phone Charger? And that was, that had a long evolution and I played around with it for quite a long time until I was happy with that one. But it is, I could just do that forever. I love it so much. It's so fun.
Are you like, now the interviews on your podcast are a slightly disappointing distraction. Really, it's mainly about, you know, the interviews are a delivery device for the jingles now, right?
Sometimes. I mean, some of my favorite episodes are, it depends on the conversation. So I think earlier on, if I was having a conversation with someone like Joe or another comedian, it was often the case that it was very bitty. They were little chunks that would end up being used. Yeah. So I would need the jingles to bridge the chunks to connect everything.
Yeah.
But then more recently, I've been talking to more kind of slightly more, in quotes, grown-up people. Like I talked to more authors of more kind of serious books, perhaps. Like I talked to Kazuo Ishiguro the other day.
Amazing. And, do you have to, what do you do when you get ready for an interview like that? You like approach it completely differently, or you like, I'm going to pretend I'm talking to Louis or Joe. What do you do?
No. I hope that there are moments when it's informal and silly. But I really don't want to humiliate myself in those situations. And I'll definitely read whatever book they are plugging or whatever. And I'll try and read as many of their other ones as I can. And I will, that one for Kazuo Ishiguro, I did a lot of prep and I watched a lot of interviews. And actually you don't end up using it, but you're able to relax and just not worry so much about sounding like a total ignoramus.
Yeah. And, aren't you intimidated by the size of his brain? I feel that talking to you, Adam, because you've got such a huge, like genuinely without blowing smoke up your ass, which is not something I'm going to do, but you know, you have the frames of references and all these cultural references and your passion for music. It leaves me like, fuck, I don't know anything. And when you're talking to Kazuo Ishiguro, do you think, how am I going to, this guy, there's a massive brain sitting in the room in front of me. How do I begin to maneuver my way around it? Or do you just not think like that? You just get stuck in?
No, I do think like that, but you only continue to feel like that if the other person is keen for you to continue to feel like that. You know what I mean? Like they're a dick, then they will make you feel like that.
Yeah.
But if they are in any way interesting or interested, and which he was a real classic example of some, like you can tell they'll ask you questions as well. You know what I mean? They're interested in your life as well, which is good for me because I do tend to talk about myself a lot on the podcast, but that's part of it. I justify it because that's what I want the conversations to be like. You know, I want them to be like people either on a blind date or meeting someone at a party, and it's that conversation. You know, you like each other, you're interested in each other, and you talk, and so you exchange information about your own life as well as theirs. It's not a formal interview in that way. And he was just so generous and also patient. Joe Cornish listened to it and then emailed me afterwards and said, I mean, he tends to tease me a little bit about the podcast.
It's jealousy, mate. That's jealousy. You know that's jealousy.
Yeah. But he said, that bit where you were going, there was one bit where I was telling some story. Oh, no, I said, you know, we're talking about the past and memories of the past and how you deal with things in the past that you're not happy with and uncomfortable about, and the whole conversation about how you, you know, how do you deal with problematic moments of various kinds in the past, either personally or socially. And I started talking about things that I was ashamed of in my own life. But then as soon as I'd mentioned them, he was, as any person would in that kind of conversation, Kazuo Ishiguro was saying, like, what kind of things? And then I realized that I couldn't actually specify what they were because I didn't want to get into an area where I was dredging up things that I was ashamed of and actually mention names and incidents. Yeah. Because I wasn't prepared to re-engage. I didn't want to encourage someone to come out of the woodwork and say, oh yeah, fuck you, by the way.
You know what I mean? That's the problem with having listeners, Adam. That's why you're safe on this podcast.
Yeah.
But also then you're basically turning that into a new format, which is therapy with Kazuo Ishiguro, which is what a thing.
Yeah, that's right. But Joe was like, you're talking to Kazuo Ishiguro and you're making veiled, nebulous references to things that you've done wrong to other people in the past. And he's just sitting there listening, going, what are you talking? Like, because I was saying, you know, I'm so ashamed and I feel so bad. And he's like, wow, what did you do? And I wasn't actually telling him. I didn't kill anyone. So I guess people listening were sort of thinking, Jesus, what the fuck did he do? It wasn't too bad. It was nothing too bad. It's just stuff that you wake up and you think about and you squirm and you think, oh no. Mm.
Well, we want some more. Let's see if we can find some more of those in your Amazon purchase history. There's plenty more shame to be had. And we haven't got much longer with you, Adam. So I'm going to try and rattle through a few. For example, the Zignet 10-foot variable badminton set. I mean, there's a man who's just moved to the country. I'm in the country. I have land. I will badminton.
Oh man, we had some good badminton times. It didn't last that long. Part of the reason for that is probably that no one ever put it away in the shed.
Rot.
It was just left
born
out.
To rot.
They just rot the hell away really quickly. So I think maybe we only got a year of use out of it. But what a year that was. And we had some magnificent badminton time. I used to hate sport when I was younger.
Bad loser?
I don't know why. Bad loser, physically lazy, physically inept. Mm. Or it just wasn't working.
Found that with sport as a kid, I carried on being the clown because that was my role. Very, very shit class clown. I carried on doing that and people really don't like it when you piss around when you're trying to play a sport. And I realized the audience, the kids who were interested in me disrupting geography were not interested in me disrupting football or rugby or whatever. They wanted to do the thing.
Yeah. Sport guys don't like it, especially guys, especially football boys. I found out very quickly, get very serious when it comes to the ball and the kick and the goal and the foot.
Genuinely, I remember putting a football underneath my shirt and pretending I was pregnant when I was about 8 or 9.
Yeah.
And thought, this is fucking gold.
That is classic. I love it.
And they were like, what are you doing? What are you doing? We can't play if you do that. And they just didn't laugh or anything, dicks. I'm glad you've laughed just now. I'm happy now. That's fixed that.
Yeah, man. That's good.
That's fixed that.
You're not pregnant. You've got a football up there, you monkey.
Oh, boy.
But I didn't like any of that.
Yeah.
And I remember Joe Cornish and Louis Theroux, when we were at school, hanging out on a weekend and playing badminton and then enthusing about it. And I just thought, really? But that's sport. Because one of the things that bonded us as a group was our aversion to sport on the whole.
Yeah.
We'd rather be watching a movie or TV. And I got quite discombobulated when Joe and Louis started playing badminton. I was like, no, that's sport. Mm. You know, we don't do
that. That's treachery. That is group treachery. Yeah.
Yeah. And then of course I realized as I got older that my whole attitude to sport was massively ignorant and that it was great fun. And badminton for someone not especially coordinated was something that was pretty doable and really, really fun. Yeah. So I recommend that for similar non-sporties.
Good. All right. So let's see where we're at now. We've got a look at this. Oh, 5-meter bell tent. The 13th of August, 2012. £635 on a bell tent. You're making the most of the land, you see. This is amazing. This is the leaving the London dream that you're doing here.
2012. I think we got that because I'd been invited to do more gigs at festivals. Like I would... I'd be doing things like Latitude on a more regular basis. Not sure about the dates here, but that was definitely part of what was going on.
Yeah.
Was thinking, let's try and, you know, I was taking my family along to these festivals. I'd be able to wangle some passes and do the whole bell tent thing in the artist camping area.
What a life. Just hanging out with like Robin Ince. Can you imagine? The dream. You could just have a moan off.
He was always really nice whenever I used to see him.
He's a top guy. He's a top guy. 10th of September 2012, the Stanley Fat Max Heavy Duty Stapler / Nailer. Lovely. You got a nailer there.
Oh, man. I've got more than one of those now.
Of course you have.
I love those. Big industrial. Ka-choo, ka-choo, ka-choo.
They give a kick back as well.
Yeah, man. I love it. I've stapled the absolute heck out of anything because I've got cables and wires and I'm always putting up fairy lights. I love fairy lights.
I can see some behind you. Yes, I can see.
Yeah.
LED lights.
So
it's, do you think it's sort of fulfilling the, that is a Norfolk version of in America, in the deep South, they'll get guns for the same thing. Like this is like a British version, the staple gun. That, because the kick it gives you, it does give you a slight, ooh.
Yeah. Instead of the NRA, it's the NSA. No, the NSA is another thing. The National Stapler Association. I'd be very happy to join that and protect my stapler rights. I could be, if they had holsters for them, I would invest in those as well. So I could go around with two big Fat Max staplers on my hips and just be stapling the absolute hell out of everything.
Oh, staple holster would be so
good. Have you ever stapled your finger? Not with a Fat Max, that would be hospital. But
no, I once put a knitting needle through my finger. That was the on the, you know, the old sewing machines, not a knitting needle, a sewing needle. And I was doing things
through the nail.
Yeah, I put my finger under there. My mum was on the phone. I remember she was right next to me and I was pissing around with it. I was about 5 years old. And you go round and you think, as I'm going round, it's getting further away. So then I kept going round, if that makes sense, thinking it would keep going further away. But the nature of the machine is very much up and down, up and down, up and down. So I went all the way back and I went, oh, quick, better get away because I'm really close. So I went really round really quickly and it just went thunk and I punctured my index finger. It went right through. I screamed, pulled it away, and I had a nail right through the middle of my index finger. And my mum, to her credit, carried on talking. Put the hat, put the old phone, you know, in the holster, in the old shoulder neck area.
Sure.
Reached over, thunk, pulled it out. Didn't even stop. Didn't even stop for breath as she spoke. Amazing.
Nice. Oh, I remember stapling my finger just with a small domestic stapler.
Yeah.
Just fooling around with it absentmindedly, maybe on the phone or whatever, and then click. And it's like, oh, that's gone into my thumb. And it's gone really, really deep. And I remember it was hard to pull it out. You know what I mean? Like the first time you really stuff something deep into your flesh, it's a real surprise that it's like, oh, this isn't just going to slide out. I've got to really pull on this thing.
Yeah. This is gripping in meat. This is properly stuck in a lump of meat that happens to be my body.
Yeah. You know, it's like in films when someone gets a big tree splinter in them or something in some survival movie. They, you know, they wince a little bit and bite down on something and it slides out fairly easily. But no, that's never going to slide out. Once that's really in there, down in your thigh, touching the bone, you're going to have to get a mate to get some pliers and yank that out. And then you probably shouldn't because you'll bleed to death. But
well, look at Henry VIII. Look at Henry VIII. It properly did for him, didn't it? He had basically a rotten splinter in his leg and he just
did he? Is that was his problem, was it?
That was his downfall. Yeah, he was jousting and he got a massive splinter from a wooden joust and went into his calf and they never really got it out and it was infected and he sort of slowly died of infection for like 8 years or something like that. It was crazy.
That's why I stopped jousting.
Me too, man. Do you not joust anymore?
No. No, I really, it's too dangerous. I'm too old now.
What's the purchase history of this jokester? Stay tuned for my mate bought a toaster.
So listen, and I can see, I'm leaping ahead now because we're running out of time with you, Adam Buxton. I've enjoyed this so much. And there's a whole load of things I've missed out. So that means inevitable sequel. So the emails will start again in about
two.
A week. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
All right.
So look, here we are, 20th of November 2020. You know, just now you were taking the credit for researching assiduously Kazuo Ishiguro, but I see here, I see the truth. You bought the audiobooks. So you sat down and had a nice listen to Kazuo Ishiguro's novels you bought.
I do think about this. Does listening to an audiobook count as having read the book? I mean, yes, it definitely does. Because, you know, where does that leave non-sighted people? Do they just not read? Of course they do. They listen to the audiobook. They have had the experience of the words and the story and the nuance and everything that comes with reading a book. They just haven't done it with their eyes in that way. And there is this feeling that is so strong that it's like, the act of reading with your eyes, I mean, it is a different experience, no doubt, but does it change the actual engagement with the book? I mean, I've had the experience of reading a book, of hearing a book on audiobook and then rereading it with my eyes because I liked it so much.
Yeah.
And the net result, the net experience is not that different.
I'm gonna put this out there, and this goes against, you know, every inch of my rigorously educated books are punishment and you need to sit and sweat and read books for hours and hours background, but I think audiobooks that I can think of a couple that I've listened to recently, I think I've enjoyed them more from listening to them than I would have if I'd read them.
Yeah, it's more of a lottery, because if you're the great thing about being able to read a book with your own eyes is that the voice is yours that you're reading it in, and the tone of it and all that stuff you do it just the way you want it to, so you colonize it completely if you're enjoying it. But when you're listening to an audiobook, very often you'll get someone reading it who you just think, I don't like you. I don't like your voice. I don't like the way you pronounce bonquette.
Yeah.
I don't like anything about you. I think you're ruining this book.
Yeah.
And that happens a lot, and it's a real drag.
Yeah.
And that actually, in the past, that's happened, and then I've just thought, okay, I'm going to have to buy the actual book.
I love it when accents go wrong on audiobooks. That's one of my favorite things, when Americans just dip into a British accent on an audiobook. That is always a pleasure.
Yeah.
There's one in particular, I won't name him, but oh my God, it was disastrous. And it was like a really brutal crime novel. And I was just giggling away. Listen, here we go. We're going to the last couple of things now, Adam, before we lose you. This tells an interesting story. The Flycam comfort stabilizing arm and vest for Flycam, bought on the 4th of April, very much handed back a couple of weeks later. It looks like
they sent me the wrong thing.
Dickheads.
They sent me the absolute wrong thing.
It's a Steadicam stabilizer. Wow.
Yeah, a Steadicam stabilizer, but it's a really cheap one. Because, you know, if you buy a real Steadicam, that's thousands and thousands of pounds. What I wanted, because this is a story about me getting older, is that I now get tendonitis very easily. And if I'm doing any kind of
repetitive action with my hands, shut up, watch out,
then I'm likely to suffer for it a few days later and get real sharp pains in my wrists and things like that.
Wanking? What?
Sorry, that's kind of Tourette-ic.
You have to do that. God's sake.
No, I don't. I'm sorry.
I wasn't thinking about wanking.
But
you bought a Steadicam thing for wanking. What?
No. Yeah, to be able to strap my enormous schlong to the Steadicam arm and then just... Anyway, no, that's not what I was doing. I'm sorry about that image. The thing was that when I was going out on my walks with Rosie, my dog friend, and recording the intros and outros for the podcast... Yes. I do it with this small dictaphone, and I always was holding the dictaphone in the same hand, in my left hand. And I would notice that if I was going out and walking and doing that for about an hour or so, I always tape a lot more than I need to. I'd come back and I'd really feel it the next day, just my arm being in that same position and my wrist being in that position.
My God, you've got a podcast injury. That is how much you're sacrificing for your art.
So I thought to myself, if I get some kind of vest... an armature thing strapped to the vest, then I can mount the dictaphone to the arm and I can do it hands-free. And I'm sure there's an easier way of doing it, but that was my solution. I haven't used the vest yet. First of all, they sent me the wrong thing. They just sent me the entirely... I didn't ask for
this. Have you got it? Is it there?
What a pain in the rectum.
Is it there?
Yeah.
Can we have a look?
It is.
So you've bought this Steadicam vest for a podcast. Most people would assume a Steadicam vest would be for filming like the Olympics or something. Look at that. It looks like a stab vest or something. It's incredible.
It looks like a piece of armor that someone would wear out in Iraq or something.
Yeah.
And you can mount stuff to it, but it doesn't. It's totally bullshit. And I haven't used it for actually... if anyone's listening and they can think of a better solution for a hands-free recording thing, all I want is to be able to, you know, it's a standard screw mount on the back of this little dictaphone that would attach to most tripods. Yeah, yeah. And I thought, I imagined this vest coming with a articulated arm and a screw mount that I could just pop the
right in front of you,
recorder
and it would
onto.
Move around, yeah. Have you
and it would all be stable. I was like, Steadicam, yeah, fine. And I'm not going to hear. Like, you know, I'm using one of these, what are they called? Angle poise mic holders right now. Mm. So I just wanted that on a vest.
Mm, mm.
And I thought that this was going to be it, but it's not.
Okay, two options for you. Train the fucking dog so you can put a microphone on the dog's back.
That's a good idea.
That's one option. Also, just employ a person. You've got loads of, you've got like nine or ten children. Get one of those children just to walk along in front of you, holding the microphone as you go.
Yeah. That's what podcast is. Like, I did Emily Dean's podcast, Walking the Dog. Mm. And she came out and visited me in Norfolk and we went for a walk. And she had a producer running along beside us with mics.
What?
Yeah.
What kind of high-end podcast budget is that? Hellfire.
I think it was for the Times then, wasn't it? So, okay. There you go. It's like a proper production.
Listen, Adam, final thing. You've got this arriving in a couple of days' time. And this sort of, this seals the deal, really. The Seven Seas Joint Care Active Capsules. There we are, you see. This will help. This will help. That's more useful than the, you know, harness.
Will it help? That's the question. I don't know. I've been taking the joint pills now for over a year. Because I started getting bad tendonitis and bad knees as well towards the beginning of lockdown. And has it helped? Yeah. Hard to tell. That's the thing with most of these remedies is that...
Too scared to stop taking them as well. That's the problem once you're in.
The thing is that, you know, most of the things, if you're lucky, that go wrong with your body are going to pass. They're going to right themselves. Minor things I'm talking about. And if you just sit tight, you know, that mysterious pain in your elbow, which might be really intense for quite a few months, it will just subside and there will be no rhyme or reason to it or nothing that you can particularly identify. Like, I didn't stop doing anything particularly, it just went. But then, you know, as you say, you sort of don't want to take the chance. And you convince yourself, oh no, it went away because of the pills I was taking. But I think they're probably totally worthless.
But again, you're too scared. You're basically taking these pills out of superstition. That's a great way to build medicine on superstition.
Yeah, well, that is a large part of the medical industry, isn't it? It's like,
works well.
Well, you don't know, I don't know what I'm doing, but try this. And then you think, oh, okay. And then a big part of the improvement comes from your mental realignment and your positive. I mean, I, you know, the power of placebos is well established and well documented. And if your mind is telling itself that things are going to improve, there's a good chance they will.
Adam, that feels like a very nice positive note to end on.
Yeah, there you go.
It feels like we've done a kind of wellness podcast at the end, man. That was great. We changed genres at the end. Adam Buxton, thank you for coming on My Mate Bought a Toaster. You are a wonderful, wonderful human. Thank you for being on the show.
Hey, man, nice to see you. Thank you so much for having me. And yeah, let's do this again sometime.
Thank you. Lots of love. All the best.
Bye, man.
Bye, 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 bye. I can't. It's the same always. Love you, buddy, baby, and I want you for the rest of my day. Was it me? Was that Adam Buxton on My Mate Bought a Toaster? I'm sure it was, wasn't it? It was the real deal. Very exciting. And a lovely man to boot. Very funny indeed. Very good. So thank you to the wonderful Adam Buxton for coming on the show. Thank you to you for listening. Maybe you're a long-term listener. Maybe you've just dropped in for the Buxton-a-thon. In which case, hello to you. Welcome. This is My Mate Bought a Toaster. Bit late to be saying welcome. I realise that. But there's loads of other good episodes available. Go and look at the list. Should I... Guys, who's listened to the show before? Should I sort of reference like a good show they could listen to? Rufus Sewell, that's very good. Mel Gaudreich, Dom Jolly, Gabby Logan. Oh, there's so many. I don't know which is my fave. I don't know. They're all wonderful. Anyway, thank you if you're a new listener and welcome along. Make sure you subscribe and review and all the bits. And I'll be back next week with a cheeky bit of Sanjeev Bhaskar, if you fancy it. See you then. I'm thinking of you when I'm without you. I'm thinking about you. Please don't leave me. Don't see me. Why do we have to part? GreatBigOwl.com
Hello, it's Mr. P here.
I'm the other Mr. P.
And we are the hosts of Two Mr. P's in a Podcast.
The educational podcast where you don't actually learn a thing.
No, instead we explore the weird, wonderful and downright hilarious things that happen in school from people actually doing the job. We reminisce on our own time at school, funny things we experience each day. And of course, we share your hilarious stories from the chalk face. So if you work in a school or just want a nostalgic trip down memory lane, sit up straight, fingers on lips, and get ready for the lesson.